Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, joined by Father Andrew Yonan. And I hold in my hands a book called Advice from Aristotle, Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics. And you might say, well, who's that for? I'll tell you who it's for. It's for you if you're interested in human flourishing and happiness. And it's for your kids or your nieces and nephews or your grandkids. If you're like, I don't know why these kids don't, aren't more connected to the philosophical and religious traditions of our, well, this is a great book to realize, to help them realize in a really fun way in language that they will get that some of these things are the traditions of our culture because they're really, really good. And but this is a book about Aristotle, one of the great thinkers, a man who's such a great thinker that in the Middle Ages, people didn't even use his name. It was like he was bigger than Cher. They just called him the philosopher. And this book is dedicated. Can I read the dedication, Father?
Oh, no. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I? Yeah. It's dedicated to my garbage people.
Yeah.
Why, Father? Oh, first of all, welcome, Father Andrew.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Why is the book dedicated to your garbage people?
That is, that's actually an inside joke.
Is it?
It's dedicated to a particular group of people
that
are very special to me. So, however, a lot of people that have gotten the book, by the way, basically everybody got this book before I got my copies. So it was this funny thing that all these people would buy it on Amazon and like, oh, they would like post it and like, oh, cool, I haven't seen one yet, but I'd repost it. But a lot of them would see the dedication and think that I'm saying that everyone is garbage, which is also true in a sense, insofar as we're fallen human being, you know, whatever. But no, this is like an inside joke to a group of friends that is.
I took it that you really appreciated the work of the garbage people who come by and take your garbage away. Once a week.
I actually absolutely appreciate their work.
I know.
I that's not too. Even a joke. Imagine life without them. Imagine a city without garbage.
This, okay, so the book, I got to say, I just got a copy today. So I read the chapter on friendship.
Okay.
Deep insight into Aristotle, but in very modern, contemporary kind of whimsical, fresh, flippant, fun language.
I've never been called whimsical before. I like that.
That's the first time with whimsical? I don't want to like make people think that it's that the language you use is somehow like inaccessible. It's accessible. It's fun. This is a fun read.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've taught this book, the book that this is written on the Nicomachean Ethics, a number of times. I teach philosophy a lot. And my students are generally non-philosophy majors. So, you know, years and years and years of practice explaining philosophy stuff to non-philosophy people, my concern was that it was that it became kind of watered down because the way I explained it. And it wasn't until I showed it to some scholars that I have a lot of respect for who've written really serious books when they said, no, you're not doing, you didn't do that. You didn't.
No, right.
It's not less substantial because it's like clearly explained in non-technical language. So that's exactly what I was going for. So I was really happy when
just in the parts that I read, I felt like it was amazing to me how you were taking what is very complex stuff. And I mean, complex in the sense that, you know, he's trying to describe human nature, for example, or trying to describe what virtue is or that kind of thing. And that requires some subtlety, but you do it in a way, I found it extremely accessible.
Well, thank you.
But also, what part of you said, you know what, I need cartoon illustrations in this book on the Nicomachean Ethics?
I thought it would be funny. Originally, I drew them myself.
Uh-huh.
And they were just literal stick figures, and they weren't even good stick figures. If you've ever seen a good stick figure, you're like, oh, okay, that's art. No, it was just like a bad stick figure with my like word bubbles and my terrible handwriting. And I scanned those, and I was serious about having them in the book. And then a former student of mine, Ruvi, who's like a good artist, decided to, well, she didn't decide. I asked her if she could do this, and
this is
a lot better.
Right.
Yeah. Although the stick figures would have been funny, but these are a lot more, you know.
But for example, in this section I read on on friendship, the idea of having mutual goodwill,
yeah.
but then defining good in three different ways.
Right.
And
right.
and there's this just this little tiny little silly picture of two friends having mutual goodwill towards one another, and yeah. it actually helps the brain go, yeah. okay, I'm. It just organizes the material for
right,
me.
Right. Well, thank you. Yeah. No, she did a great job with them. I'm really happy with them.
Okay, so tell us about Aristotle. Why should this show is called Catholic Answers?
Yeah,
you're a Catholic priest of the Chaldean Rite.
Yeah,
you teach philosophy and you run a Chaldean seminary.
Yes.
Why are you teaching us Aristotle? Why aren't you teaching us I don't know, the Book of Jude or something?
Yeah, that's a cool question. It's actually there's sort of two sides to this. One is from the tradition. It's really sort of embedded in the Catholic tradition, broadly speaking, at least since the Middle Ages, to take philosophy seriously, and in particular since the Middle Ages, as you noted, Aristotle. Mm-hmm. In the Chaldean tradition, in the Chaldean and Assyrian tradition, what's called the Church of the East, it actually goes even further than that. And we have commentaries from bishops of the Church of the East on Aristotle's works that goes back to as far back as the 6th and 7th century.
Wow.
And so that tradition is even sort of, in particular with Aristotle, even goes back even farther with us.
Yeah.
On the other side.
So it's like, you're kind of like the Chaldean church. Well, we were into Aristotle before Aristotle.
Way before.
It's cool.
Well, so
that's what you're saying.
So the story is, everybody knows, St. Albert the Great and Thomas Aquinas.
Right.
And the West sort of rediscovered Aristotle when, so the Arabic philosophers were writing on him and they brought him to the West
yeah.
through Spain and all of that. Cool. Where did the Arab philosophers find
him? They get
well, the church that was there in the Middle East
Isn't
was already
wonderful?
Writing about Aristotle
yeah.
and we had commentaries.
Right.
And in fact, when Baghdad was established and there were a lot of centers of learning there, it was monks from the Church of the East and among other churches that were asked to translate Aristotle from Greek into Aramaic and then into Arabic.
Right.
And it was those translations or sort of that tradition that was brought to the West. And then from Arabic, it was translated initially into Latin. And that's what people like St. Albert and St. Thomas were looking at until they said, okay, well, we should go back to the original Greek text and translate them directly into Latin.
Right.
Until that movement happened, William of Moerbeek, I think, was the guy that did that. Until that was happening, it was a translation of a translation of a translation.
That's a wonderful part of the story,
yeah.
though, that the Arabic scholars that gave them this to Europe got this from Chaldean Christian scholars.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't exactly called Chaldean back then, but I'm okay with calling
okay.
them now. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so but why, though? Why? I mean, even if we say, you could say to me, Father, it's yeah. very ancient, this Christian interest
right.
in Aristotle.
Yeah.
Why? What is it about Aristotle?
Right. That's the more interesting part of the question. I think one thing that's easy to forget in our fervor in religion and being sort of religious people is nature and natural reason. And it's very much within the Catholic sort of tradition we have what's called natural law within ethics. And we have a very sort of intricate, interesting relationship between faith and reason in the Catholic Church. And so in our zeal in sort of promoting the faith, which is totally legitimate, we forget that, faith and reason have a relationship that is very, important.
Yeah.
And so this is an attempt. So one of the reasons why I think people are increasingly polarized and there's bitterness in society and all this sort of nasty stuff is happening is not just because we disagree on ideas. It's that we don't see each other necessarily as human beings, or we don't build each other up or build ourselves up in our humanity, which can be a foundation or should be a foundation of our communication even across ideological boundaries. And so Aristotle, I think, does an amazing job of understanding human nature and what human flourishing is. And that's something that, I mean, this wasn't written for a Catholic audience as such. It was written really for everybody.
Clear. Right. Anybody can read this
because
book.
I think everybody needs to work on being human and better yeah. as a human being. And then from that foundation, when you go from a healthy or healthier humanity, that's a stronger foundation to start talking about Christ. But if you're just we're just all rotten and I'm just a terrible human being and so are you and so are we're all, and allows just serving Christ into this and on an intellectual level, that's what happens on the level of salvation. We are all sinners in need of the Savior. But when I'm talking to you, I should see you as a human being and I should want you to be as happy as a human being as you can, and I should be striving to do the same. And if we're both sort of working on that, we'll have a lot more in common to have the conversation.
Wonderful. Yeah. Advice from Aristotle, Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics by Father Andrew Yonan, who is our guest this hour. If you have questions on Aristotle, if you have questions on the use of philosophy in the Christian circles and in the presentation of the Christian faith, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. More on Aristotle with Father Yonan when we come back right after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, "Why don't you air these people?" And I said, "No, because I don't think they're Catholic." He says, "By what right do you have to say that?" I said, "I own the network."
Mother Angelica Live Classics, every morning, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Andrew Yonan is our guest, and we're so happy to have him here. And he's not always seeking out time in front of the microphone because he's a philosopher, and you know how they are. But we're so grateful that he came because, and probably his publisher made him come. I don't know. It's Cascade Books, and you can get the new book, yeah. Advice from Aristotle, Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics.
I'm really happy with Cascade, by the way. They're just great to work with.
Oh, I'm so
great
glad to hear it.
Yeah, they're up in Oregon.
Well, they had to have a good, fun spirit in order to do this. I mean, they had to be willing to let you speak to people in the way that, like, this reads like, I hate to say it, but reads like a normal person with a fun sense of humor wrote it, not like a philosopher wrote it. Is that insulting?
No, I take that as a compliment because I think one of the ways books like this get ruined is people trying to sound either too smart, and I'm going to sort of artificially introduce formal language when there's no reason to do that, or I'm going to sort of talk down to people because I'm so much smarter than everybody that everyone else is a dummy.
Yeah.
I knowing that that's how books like this get ruined, I just sort of tried to like steer right through that. But Cascade Wiffenstock took a, I don't know if they took a risk, but I'm not like a famous person. You know,
well, you are now. Look, you're here.
Well, now I'm on Catholic Answers.
Yeah, so, that pretty much
the famousest ever.
Advice from Aristotle, Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics. So Aristotle, living in the 300s BC, in a little place we like to call Greece. I mean, did he teach Alexander the Great?
He really did.
But then he wrote a lot about stuff. He was interested in it. But you picked the Nicomachean Ethics.
Yeah.
Why?
Because before I ever taught this book, I was really deeply influenced by it as an undergrad. And when I remember reading this book in, it was probably Dr. John Goyette's class at Sacred Heart Seminary. So we read through this, and I was just like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it tells you so many things that you don't really wouldn't normally think about. Because when you're a kid, you're growing up, you just sort of, this is good, that's bad, and that's it. But this is sort of like, this is why.
Yeah. Why is that good?
Why is this good?
Yeah.
Why is
it? What are the levels of the good of this thing?
Yeah. It's the Sabbath was made for man. Yeah. So now, okay, there's these laws. They're for us. Well, how are they for us? And this really gets into the inside of it.
Right.
Not that he has a Sabbath, but you know that.
No, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah. That there's a sense of, like even in the, again, I read the chapter today on friendship, which is a beautiful chapter.
Yes.
And Aristotle is so orderly the way that he talks about human nature. This sense of you have friendships of what you call you didn't call them friendships of utility. Which is the usual
business relationships,
partnerships, yeah, or friendships partnership,
yeah.
And then friendships of pleasure,
yeah.
And then friendships of virtue,
yeah.
But then the all the things that Aristotle says about what each of those is, and they're not bad things. You know, there's nothing wrong with a friendship of utility.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're using people.
Right.
But there's these higher levels you can go to. But then I have to say, when I read that as a Christian, then I think about the Jesus saying, "I no longer call you servants, but friends."
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this has a meaning to it.
Yeah.
Even I don't know if Jesus read Aristotle, but certainly even in the ancient world, there was this, I mean, to have been called a friend by Jesus and then to have Aristotle unpack it for us. What are the levels of friendship? What does that mean that Jesus called us his friends?
Yeah.
It opens up even the Gospels in a way for you.
I think it's a cool question whether Jesus or not would have read Aristotle. I have no idea what the answer to that would be, but sure. We're not talking about the same type of thinking when we're talking about the Gospels versus Aristotle, certainly there's a shared vocabulary. I mean, both were written in Greek, for example.
Yeah.
There's some sort of shared overlap within the culture, and certainly there's a shared humanity. And so Christ, in his humanity, is speaking, and I no longer call you servants, but friends. I don't know, is that, you know, we're no longer friends of utility. I don't know if he ever would have thought of us as that.
Right.
You know, but certainly we're friends. The idea would be to be friends of virtue with Christ.
Right.
Because he wants what's truly the best for us.
Right.
Which is, you know, beatitude and, you know.
Yeah. Right. There are some callers, and I want to get to the callers. The number, by the way, there are a few lines open, 888-3187-884. So what is that? How is the Nicomachean Ethics organized? Why is it this thing that you read it and you go, wow, this opens up life in a way that I hadn't had it opened up to me before?
Yeah. I teach a lot of Aristotle's books throughout the curriculum that I go through. And this is the ethics is the most readable, I think. And it's compared to the sort of famously difficult texts that he has, books on analytics and on logic and on, like, what does knowledge mean? And within metaphysics, these are famously, like, insanely difficult texts to the point where a lot of interpreters are like, maybe they're not even books. Maybe they're just notes that, like, class notes that he was lecturing from.
Right.
Or notes that students were taking as he was.
Right.
This is really readable. This is one of the maybe three or four books that are the most readable from Aristotle's corpus. And for sure there are textual puzzles in his book, but I don't think they're sort of so burdensome on the text that it becomes impossible to read. They're just sort of like, well, how does this kind of thing work with that thing? And I tried to just sort of like ignore that stuff because I do think he has a comprehensive picture that is complete and interesting, despite these little glitches that maybe you'll find if you really hold a microscope up to the text.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So what does he teach in the Nicomachean Ethics?
Well, the sort of basic structure is he'll start off by saying, all right, what's a human being? And for Aristotle, everything in nature is purposeful, you know? And sometimes the purpose of it is a little bit, you know, hard to figure out, like, what's the purpose of, like, a rock?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe the sort of teleology of those things isn't as blatantly obvious as the tree is there to grow or whatever, or to bear. But he says, well, human beings have to have a purpose, must have, like everything else in nature. What might that be? And he has this way of thinking about things in nature that the thing that sets them apart from other species is sort of the thing that's special about them. For Aristotle, for the human being, that would mean logos, the sort of ability to think, but also to communicate with others. And so that gives them the sort of foundation to go further and say, okay, so that means there must be virtues of the mind, there must be virtues of social life. And to do those well, to act well with that end in mind, that's the ability to do that would be virtue. And actually doing that activity would be what happiness is. And so to think well, that's sort of what happiness must be, the sort of contemplative thought process. But however, there's also a kind of happiness that comes from social life, which is why 1/5 of his book is about friendship, 2 out of 10 books is about friendship. And one way to read the Nicomachean Ethics is to see it as a sort of prelude to his book on politics, because for him, the city is an extremely important thing. But I didn't write on the politics for a lot of reasons, but for sure this is a
well. This would probably be the most helpful to a person today. And sometimes we have these words that we take to be good, And I don't think in the modern world we reflect on them the way that Aristotle did on, well, why is that a good? Why and what is it that's good about that good? And is there a higher good than that good? So that when you talk about virtue, for example, and friendship, the modern person has all these words like, I don't know, there's certain key words that you got to say, and they're like magic words, like tolerance, or I'm trying to think of some of the others, but it doesn't seem that we've done the groundwork for these words the way that Aristotle does. And that if the recovery of some of these things, like the discussion of virtue and happiness not meaning just la la la, but happiness meaning, you know, a very, very high good. The recovery of these words seems to me would be very helpful in a society that has certain goods that it has not reflected on. Why are those goods good?
Yeah, well, I think that's the role of philosophy in general.
Okay.
And that's really a Socrates thing, to sort of go around and say, all right, we're using these words and we think we know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Give me a definition for that.
Right.
And then you get killed. And then, you know.
Yeah, because Socrates just kills you.
So
right?
he's like admittedly annoying, but.
Yeah.
That's sort of what philosophy in general is supposed to do. And as a rule, the city, so to speak, the rest of the community isn't like it, that's not fun for everybody else. Philosophers like to sit around like, oh, let's define words for most people, most sort of normal people. Like, that's really annoying and dumb to waste your time on. And it's kind of an irritant. And Socrates sort of saw himself as an irritant. He thought himself like a little mosquito. But that the relationship between thoughtfulness in general, if I can make it a little bit more abstract, and the rest of human life, there can be a tension between those things. And this is a book that attempts to sort of, you know, make the rest of life more thoughtful.
Yes. Right.
Because it's easy for us to kind of just sort of get comfortable and use words without reflecting on what they mean.
I guess diversity is the other one I was thinking of.
There's all kinds of them. Yeah, sure.
And they're not bad things. I'm not saying they're bad things, but we don't have a thought behind them. We just have them as kind of totems of, you know.
Sure.
Okay. So you put some of this Aristotelian thinking into those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly you have paths that were not clear become clear. Things that you might be doing that are fun or bring you a great deal of wealth or whatnot. That doesn't mean that those things are good for you. Why are they not good for you?
Right.
What is a good thing that's good for you?
Right, right.
This kind of thinking is very helpful to us.
Yeah. And I think a shortcut to get answers to that, or like sort of suggested answers to that, would be, all right, let's look at the people that have this stuff. Let's look at the people that have a ton of money.
Right.
And look past their Instagram posts, that 3-second sort of picture. Look past that and look at, like, try to ask, like, what kind of life do they have? I don't know if they're really any happier than the people that don't have as much money.
You don't think Johnny Depp and Amber Heard are happier than us?
I have certain friends that are really into that, watching that, and I've that work at Catholic Answers that I regret being friends with, but I got sucked into that earlier today.
Yeah.
As I was like anxiously waiting to come on, have cameras pointed at me. And I'm just like, gosh, the whole thing is miserable because the whole relationship is so sad. And then, but even sadder than that is all of us watching it
on
TV.
Right. And because somehow it gives us pleasure to.
This is the interesting thing that we're all caring about. Gosh, it's pure gossip. None of this is any of our business.
No, that's right.
And there we are.
That's right.
And now we're talking about it, and they're listening, and it's just compounding.
Advice from Aristotle: Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics. It is from Father Andrew Yonan, who is a priest of the Chaldean Diocese of. It's an eparchy. Of St. Peter.
Yep, St. Peter.
And that covers the western United States?
From the Mississippi West, yep.
And there's a lot of Chaldeans here in the western part of the United States.
We're mostly in San Diego, but we've got a bunch in Phoenix and some in Las Vegas and some in Northern California. And
We got a bunch of calls for you. Can we go to some calls?
Let's see if any of these are interesting.
All right. We're going to pass judgment on you.
Probably
callers.
Ready?
Tom in Columbus, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio. You are numero uno this hour. Go ahead, Tom, with your question for Father Andrew Yonan.
Hey, good day, everyone. When you mentioned, can you all hear me?
Yes, we hear you well.
When you mentioned, Father, about the Arab scholars and Chaldea, when they were translating the Aristotelian or dealing with the Aristotelian perspective or philosophies, were they also studying other types of philosophies with that during that period in the early Christian era?
Yeah, that's a cool question. So the Arab philosophers that sort of took it on after the Aramaic-speaking Christian philosophers were writing were certainly, many of them were very interested also in Plato's philosophy. In the Christian schools that were teaching, what we know in the sort of 5th, 6th century is they would read, the philosophy curriculum would look something like, they would read Aristotle's logical works, some of his natural works, and then they would kind of end up with natural theology from certain Neoplatonists. So yes, they were trying to mix them up even then. I'm being played off.
Yeah, you are, but we can continue if you want when we come back. Yeah. Hang on, Tom, we got to take this break. We'll be right back with more. We're discussing Aristotle with the author of Advice from Aristotle, Father Andrew Yonan. Right back with more after this.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Andrew Yonan is our guest. He has a wonderful new book called Advice from Aristotle, Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics. That one of, as he was saying to us earlier, one of Aristotle's most accessible books. But it does Aristotle, even in his most accessible book, Aristotle doesn't give you cartoon illustrations. He doesn't give you jokes. He doesn't give you references to heavy metal bands. You understand? I'm not going to give them all away. Well, but
one of your guys over there was really happy about the heavy metal.
Oh yeah, Thomas. Thomas loves philosophy and he loves heavy metal music. So he was thrilled that some of the examples in here involved heavy metal music. But this is the kind of thing where if you're like, I wish I had a book that I could put in my teenager's hand or my young adult's hand that would give them an understanding of how to begin to think about true happiness and those kinds of things. This is the book for you. I think they'll love it. Advice from Aristotle, Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics from Cascade Press. Up next on the line, Jack in Evil River, Wisconsin, listening on WXER. We're glad to have you, Jack. Go ahead with your question for Father Yonan.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Father Andrew. I won't explain my stuff, but I have a question because I went to a Bible study offered by an Episcopal priest who knew Old Greek. Mm-hmm. And my question to you is, on Aristotle's teachings, you had mentioned there was a third or a fourth translation that the Western world finally got to in the 5th and 6th century. Has anyone gone back and looked at the Old Greek written by Aristotle or the first translation? And is it that much different than what the 5th and 6th century thinkers were given at that time?
Yeah, so absolutely they did that. Now, in the West, it wasn't until the 12th century, I think, that they started to really look at Aristotle, the translation, the sort of levels of translations. But yes, it's sort of remarkable how well when they kind of compared the third, fourth level translations, when they finally dug up with that century they started doing it, dug up the Greek, they had done a pretty good job. It wasn't totally out of the ballpark, you know. They've been working on that for a long time. And still, I mean, for the last 700-800 years, they've been, you know, reexamining the text, and there's new critical editions, and everyone's got different, you know, Greek editions on their shelf. And oh no, absolutely. But we're that's kind of a continuous thing in philosophy to do that with. Now it's just Aristotle, but with it basically everybody.
Jack, thanks very, very much. Father, I do want to run this objection by you that we get from our Christian brothers and sisters, particularly I think Catholics get this from some of our Protestant brothers and sisters probably. I just want the gospel. Why do I need all of this? These pagan philosophers. I just give me the gospel.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. It's not like I'm not talking about need. It's not like you're going to go to hell if you don't read my book. That'd be a great selling point. But
I would sell more copies, yeah. Father.
But on the other hand, like the Word became flesh, and the humanity that he embraced is a real thing, and it's worth. I mean, just like it's worthy of reflection on human nature because it's the pinnacle of God's creation, and reflection is something. And God gave us the intellect capable of doing that. And so the question is not like, why should I? No, why not? What else are you doing? Are you that busy that you can't think about humanity a little bit from a human lens?
Yeah.
I mean, St. Paul makes it a big deal. In Romans 1, like God made it clear to them, but their minds were darkened. Okay, let's look at a mind that wasn't darkened as much. I mean, certainly we all have sort of,
you know, sure,
sort of right. fallenness, but... So I would just sort of reply and say like, all right, well, if you're that busy and you're just like, fine, but like, I'm going to tell you, like your viewers right now, if your choice is between you're so busy, you can only either read the gospel or my book, forget about my book, throw it in the garbage and read the gospels. But if you've got some extra time on your hands, you want something with cartoons, you know, this is better than playing video games. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But even if you don't read it, buy it. That's what I said.
That's fine, too. Jack, if you like it, review it. And if you don't like it, just forget you ever read it.
Thanks, Jack. You are going to like it, though. I'll tell you what. You open this book up and read it, you are going to like it. Bob in Williamsburg, Virginia, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are up next, Bob. Go ahead with your question for Father Andrew Yonan.
Hey, Father. Yeah, man. Father, thanks for this program. And thanks for your book. I will buy it.
Cool, thanks.
I got interested in Aristotle just recently in my life, and the fact that Thomas Aquinas really leveraged all his philosophy a lot. But I wonder if you have heard, one of the powerful things in my mind was Aristotle's eudaimonia, the great happiness, and the fact that Jefferson admitted that Aristotle was one of his most influential authors that he read.
Okay.
And I guess the thing that came out to me was happiness for Aristotle was not pleasure, but doing the right thing for the right reason. That's what drove the virtue ethics, right?
Okay, I'll say up front, I don't know anything about Thomas Jefferson. I mean, I know I vaguely
have
heard of him. I've heard of him.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
but I don't really know anything to speak to that connection. Happiness is in Aristotle distinct from bodily pleasure. So, you know, feeling good is not the same as happiness. For Aristotle, happiness is an activity, and it's a virtuous activity of the human soul as such. So it's us doing. So happiness is something that we do, not something that we feel, although the feeling does accompany it. So virtuous means you're really good at something and you're doing something that you're really good at and there's not really any obstacles. When you think about that, like, let's say you've, music is a, playing a musical instrument is a really good example, that if you've kind of put in the hours, you're good at whatever, you know, piano or whatever, and you're playing something that you like, that activity is a sort of parallel of what Aristotle means by happiness. It's like doing that, but living, like life.
Right.
So that sets it apart from a pleasure of I'm going to, whatever, get drink a bunch of alcohol and I'm going to sort of feel a kind of buzz. It's not that. It's more like the really good violin player playing violin really well and enjoying himself doing it. So there is pleasure involved, but it's not the pleasure itself.
So it's like an instruction book on how to get good at life, then.
Because a lot of it is about building habits. A lot of the ethics, there's an entire book just about building habits. And, you know, I was looking at other, like self-help books that talk about this. And a lot of what they say is true. A lot of it is kind of silly. But it's, those books can be really watered down and not quite, or not just watered down. It's just like, they only know part of the story.
Okay.
Aristotle knows a lot more of the story.
Yeah.
Of where are you at? Well, you wake up at 8 a.m. and you do it and you get to class, but you hate your life and you curse the day you were born every time you wake up and get out of bed. How can you get from there to waking up and being glad you're awake? That's the kind of thing that Aristotle can talk about.
Yeah.
How can you get from, you know, I'm exercising, I'm gritting my teeth, walking into the gym to, no, I actually look forward to my workouts now. How do you go from one place to the other? That's one of the big sort of pieces of this book.
But you know, we're so, and I'm coming right back to you, Bob, but I'm just fascinated, but we're so into the life hacks now, the do this life hack. This is not a life hack. This is, you have to work. This is, you have to work to be happy.
Absolutely. And however, you can also work and kind of spin your wheels. And so this is sort of guidance of like, a lot of people have found this valuable in actually making the quote unquote progress that they want to make in the sort of internal habits that they have, you know.
Bob, you had a great question, so I got a little involved there, but did you want to follow up or was that all right?
Well, yes, just to say that I think that's one of the powerful things of Nicomachean ethics was just that discussion of happiness, Father, that you realize, no, it's not pleasure. It's I think one of his quotes is doing the right thing for the right reason. You know, it's getting to that ultimate golden mean of his discussion of ethics.
Bob, I'm so glad you discovered Aristotle. And I have to say, I've rarely enjoyed reading about Aristotle or thinking about Aristotle as much as I've enjoyed it when I've been reading these pages from advice from Aristotle.
Thanks.
I think you're going to get a kick out of it. By the way, there's a hilarious cartoon in here about getting out of bed. About what you were just talking about.
That's a personal example. I hate waking up. I have not gained that virtue at all.
You don't have that virtue.
Yeah, I've never.
But so virtue is, it's so, I have developed the habit so much that it's now easy for me to be good in a certain way. So that it's easy for me to be good at the clarinet or
public speaking or waking up in the morning or working out or
whatever. It could even go all the way to I've developed the habit of loving my neighbor as myself.
Sure.
Could I do that?
So, So there's two ways to think about this. One is, this is how you can get really good at clarinet, but like there's more to the, because if that were it, then clarinet playing would be happiness for all human beings. But there's not something, there's two things. There's one is sort of the personal individual, you know, preferences that we like doing certain things and we would like to do certain things. But then there's a human nature that we all share, and the activity of that human nature that's proper to human nature as such, that's one of the first things he talks about, which is this thoughtfulness, this logos that's built in with us. And it has to do with community life. And it has to do with contemplation. And it has to do with even meditating on the highest things, which for Aristotle, he names God, though he has no idea what a sort of personal God would be. It's still thinking and having the highest object for thought. That's the thing that all of us have in common, not just philosophers. So that means it's a kind of, it's difficult and it's maybe rare, but it's not inaccessible to everyone. And I think about it as in terms of, you know, not like I know this philosophical text or I can read Greek or I've published papers, but it's more, I can just put the screens away, I can exist and I can be aware that I'm existing and I can know that there's something above me and just sort of experience that. I think that's kind of, that's close to what he's talking about.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm not good at doing that because I've got tons of responsibilities and things that I need to do. And so, you know, this is sort of hope that all of us, even no matter what our lifestyle can at least strive to attain.
We got to take a break. Thanks again, Bob, for that question. We'll do this break, Richard, in Dallas, and then we'll come right to your question when we come back right after this with Father Andrew Yonan on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN home video highlight for May is The Heresies, Volume 1. The Catholic Church has fought against many heresies from the beginning, and these errors still infiltrate our culture today. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul's Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Just a great delight to get to talk with Father Andrew Yonan. He's are you the rector of the seminary here for the Chaldean Seminary? Is that what it is?
I am the founding rector of the only Chaldean Rite Seminary outside of Iraq, and it's here in El Cajon, San Diego.
That is so 15, cool.
20 minutes from here with all the red lights.
And it's really cool what the Chaldean community has done here, by the way. I know this is not our topic at the time, but you have a monastery here?
We have a monastery. We have nuns. We just had an ordination of a priest on Friday.
Yeah.
One of our seminarians.
Yeah.
The Chaldean community is amazing. I'm really honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. Plus, a lot of really nice people. Like, I always have a kick when I'm...
I've met, I think, one nice Chaldean.
That's not the truth. Yeah, that's not the truth. Now, why would I like Chaldeans better than you would, Father? That makes no sense.
You don't know them as well.
Yeah. We got a big conference coming up in September, and I want to invite you to it again, September 22nd through 25th. Father, I can get you in free if you want to come.
No, I'm busy that day.
It's 3 days, and it's all about the Eucharist.
I like the Eucharist.
Yeah, so you should come. All right, this is going to be my pitch now on why you should come. There's at least a 50% chance that Father Andrew Yonan will be there. So you definitely want to come to the conference.
10%.
There's at least a 10% chance that... Father, you're not helping me with my ad. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com, put in the promo code EARLY, and you get $50 off on your ticket right now. Boy, that was
neat. I'm a pain.
Yeah. Do not buy the book, Advice for Aristotle.
Do not
buy that book. There's a 10% chance you'll enjoy it.
Yep.
Richard in Dallas, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. You're up, Richard. Go ahead with your question for Father.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Father, I think you might have answered it. What would Aristotle, what would be considered kind of his spiritual, was he, you said he was maybe a pagan, considered pagan?
Well, I don't think he believed in the pagan gods. I think he and Plato and probably Socrates, I mean, definitely Socrates, didn't believe in Zeus and those guys. The text of Aristotle that refers to the gods or God is really difficult to interpret, you know, the parts of the metaphysics and other places. So it's not quite clear. I think he believes in one God, but he also calls other things gods, like the stars. It's very kind of confusing. So, but I don't think he thought Zeus was a thing or like a real guy. Does that answer your question, or is there more to it?
Yeah, that does. Yeah. It was just because my grandmother, who was atheistic, sent me a book about Aristotle, I used to believe in New Age and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I read Aristotle, and I was like, this guy's smarter than anybody I know, yeah. even at the university where I went.
Oh, yeah.
And so I say I went from the reincarnation side of the line to the resurrection side. Because yeah. I was looking for some you know,
cool.
True
what
answer.
A great story!
All right. Yeah,
what like a great that. Story! Yeah, and it has to do with the reasonableness of it. I would assume, Richard, that there's yeah, something reasonable.
Exactly.
I mean, Aristotle encourages us to reason, and there's something reasonable about the resurrection that is not reasonable about Zeus and throwing thunderbolts.
That's the hard. That's the thing, because from the outside, from a sort of shallow reading. You know, people that are not religious are going to be like, all you religious people believe in weird stuff. And they sort of define weird stuff as something I can make fun of easily.
Yeah.
And kind of I can make memes out of cleverly. But like, you got to kind of scratch through the surface. Because if you're going to say, I mean, just sort of within reason, if you're going to say, well, all religions are blank. All right, dude, well, let me see your 5,000-page paper where you went through every single religion and showed that. Because otherwise you're just making a general statement that's kind of... Yeah. Just revealing your own stereotypes and prejudices.
Sure. Which is, I hear Christians do that to atheists, and I'm sure the atheists don't like it.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
atheists are like this. They
exactly.
all think this.
Exactly.
And they're not all this
right.
or that.
Right.
Richard, I really appreciate the call. Was that satisfactory, or is there more?
No, that was good. Really appreciate it. I'm going for the book.
I hope you will. Despite
like
what
it.
I said before, Advice from Aristotle is a very fine book. Life lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics.
I'm going to steal this mug
from our. It's not stealing, Father. We're going to give it to you.
Oh, that's no fun.
Yeah. Stealing will not make you happy. Have you not read the Nicomachean Ethics?
It won't make me happy, but it'll have a story.
Yeah, that you stole them.
That I stole
them. Okay, fair enough. So Father, the themes then of the Nicomachean Ethics, what I'm getting from it, happiness,
mm-hmm.
the distinction between the different levels of what's good for us.
Okay, so you have happiness and transitioning, going from bad habits to good habits.
Okay.
Knowing the difference between those things. Then he does talk about particular virtues for a couple of books. So you'll see things like courage and moderation and generosity and magnanimity, which is sort of like a kind of accelerated self-esteem, like sort of knowing that you are what you are and that you're something worth something.
Oh, I never heard magnanimity defined like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, the thing is, you'll see earlier translations of Aristotle translating megalopsikon as the proud, prideful man. And sure, if it's like, you know yourself as something great, but the point of the virtue is not that you think you're better than everybody else. It's that you really are great and you're aware of it.
Yeah.
So if you think you're better than you actually are, then you're not practicing the virtue. So really, the virtue is defined by self-knowledge.
But it's a really important virtue in the sense that you won't be so willing to degrade yourself.
Absolutely. Exactly.
That's the key. Like our era is an era where people are not ashamed to talk about how whatever degrading thing they're...
When you're in school and you're like, your friends are trying to peer pressure you into something, you're like, oh, you think you're too good for this?
Yeah,
and so are you.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yes, that's a very good point.
But
okay, so
good
go
luck,
ahead, Father.
Patience, politeness, I'm kind of reading the thing. Table of contents. Wit. There's a virtue in just sort of social interaction where if you're just like, just a jerk to everybody or you just ruin everybody's time all the time, that's a vice.
Debbie Downer,
exactly. Or if you're just so goofy that nobody can get a word in and talk about anything serious, that's too far.
That's hitting the kind of close to home there, Father.
Me too. I know. I'm that. But there's a sort of middle ground there. A lot of it has to do with not being too extreme in a vice. But the extremes are defined not numerically, but according to human nature. It all comes back to humanity.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a number of, 0 ounces of food is too little and 700 pounds is too much for a meal. And therefore, 350 pounds is the perfect. No, it's like it's attuned to who we are as beings, as social beings.
That's so helpful to think of it that
way. So that's the golden mean. It sort of can be over. Like, what's a moderate amount of adultery that I should commit? No, it's not a mean that's numerical. It's a mean meaning it's sort of tuned to
human nature
and its ends and its goals.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's in there too. A lot of that. Yeah. Let me see what else I can find. There is a chapter on the intellectual virtues, which might not be of interest to everybody, but it's cool. I think it's all interesting. Chapter on habits, two chapters on friendship. Then at the end, he talks about contemplation, and he sort of leads his way into the politics, just to go from, all right, if human nature really is social, which is an important part of the sort of defining thing, where it's what it's built into us to live with others. Therefore, the community we live in is something really important that we should talk about. And then he just sort of stops the book there.
Yeah. Because he's going to take that up in the politics.
Right.
But what you're describing is a kind of way of thinking about the human person that I would call scientific in the sense that it's very well ordered and well reasoned.
Yeah.
But it does seem like people started to let go of thinking of human beings this way the more empirical science gained its footing. Is that a fair...
I think it's more complicated than that. So we're talking about sort of early Enlightenment stuff. As a rule, a lot of Enlightenment thinkers pushed back against Aristotle for various reasons. There were a lot of different reasons why that happened. I mean, Galileo is one of the thinkers that, like, he just sort of made fun of Aristotelian philosophers in a lot of his writings because they were so sort of dogmatically gripping onto Aristotle's text that if he just sort of showed them something in front of their eyes, they would say no. Like, they would deny their senses and just sort of
Slavishly following.
Sort of slave. So there was that. So a lot of this stuff was pushed against. And Aristotle was used to justify some pretty bad things, too. And so that was put, you know, sort of he was associated with.
Well, he's not perfect.
Right.
I mean, he does make errors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for a lot of these reasons, he was kind of pushed into the background or rejected, though there were some Enlightenment thinkers that really kind of wanted to retain a lot of what Aristotle was doing, like Leibniz, for example. But you had that. On the other hand, at the same time, you had a different way of doing science, which is what you're referring to, which is instead of the way Aristotle was doing it, it became a lot more precise. It became about measurement. It became about mathematical expression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's awesome too. I wrote my doctoral dissertation on that.
It became about
not exactly. There
no?
was, it's a kind of a rich picture.
Okay.
Where it's right. easy as sort of religion people to say, well, science is this, science is that. No, it's a much more interesting relationship.
Yeah.
Even historically. So I have another book coming up at the end of this year, maybe at the beginning of next year. Depending on Catholic University Press, how fast they get through it.
And it's on?
It's on Laws of Nature, but a lot of the history of science is in it.
Wonderful.
But I think that's a really interesting question as well.
Okay.
And I see it, I think a better way to see it is that these are compatible ways to view the world. They're different, but they're compatible, as opposed to, oh, you science people are this and we religion people are this. I think that's...
They're compatible ways to see the world, but that doesn't mean that people will always find that compatibility.
Yeah,
people emphasize the discompatibility.
Yes. And that's what I don't like.
Yeah,
When sort of religion people do it, there's no reason to do that.
Okay.
We're sort of being threatened by reason itself. At least we're presenting ourselves that way.
Yeah.
And that's completely against the Catholic tradition. And it's against history, really. I mean,
All right. I'm trying not to be against reason and history.
Good.
I've been working on that. Okay. So one last question. He says the highest good then is contemplation.
The highest activity, yeah.
Is that similar to what a Catholic means by contemplation, or is it a different, does he mean something different by it?
I'd love to say yes, but I don't know. I don't think, on the other hand, like John of the Cross must have read a lot of Aristotle.
I see.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Right.
So when he gives us
contemplation as a good.
So it's not that Aristotle anticipated them. It's that they were reading him and they're like, oh, this, you know, I think this is probably right.
This describes the thing that I'm trying to talk about.
Or part of it or some aspect of it. There's, I think, another big mistake to make is to sort of say, I'm going to define God as, and you make this long list of attributes and you say, if it's not this, then it's wrong to call what you're talking about God. Somebody like Richard Dawkins, his whole bit is saying, I'm going to define God as the thing that answers prayers. So therefore, Aristotle was an atheist. Well, no, you just want Aristotle on your side.
I see.
But Aristotle talked about God, used the same word, and there's different aspects of God that we can know sometimes through reason, sometimes through revelation.
Father, again, the book is Advice from Aristotle. You can get it from Cascade Books. Father, thank you very much. But would you mind giving us your blessing and our
sure.
listeners your blessing before we go?
طيب وثمارا إيشو أمشيحه وحب دلها آوى وشو تابوث الروح تقدشته وعم كل نهاشة وكل زوان والعالم آمين آمين
آمين Thank you, Father.
Yep.
And that was not Greek.
That was Aramaic.
That was Aramaic. That was the language of Jesus himself. He just gave
yes,
us a blessing. Thank you very much for that, Father. Again, Advice from Aristotle. I'm stealing this copy because you stole our coffee mug.
All yours.
Life Lessons from the Nicomachean Ethics from Cascade Press. You get it. Enjoy it. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.